Welcome to the CRE Podcast, 100% Canadian, 100% commercial real estate. Now, here are your hosts, Aaron Cameron and Adam Pawatic.
Hey, this is Adam from the CRE Podcast. The episode you're about to listen to was recorded a while ago. So it's a little bit dated. It's from one of the conferences in 2023. It was released in video format at the time for anybody that wanted to watch Aaron and I speak in person. But this, of course, will be the podcast platform. So we are going to release all the content now. It is good stuff. Some of the references might not jibe contextually with the current market. Keep that in mind when you're listening to it. And I guess the other big takeaway message is for 2024, we've invested into a podcast producer, and you're going to see episodes that are released very shortly after recording, and you'll probably see a little more social media going on. So look forward to it.
Welcome to the Commercial Real Estate Podcast powered by First National. I'm Aaron Cameron. With me, of course, Adam Pawatic, recording here at the Land and Development Conference. Our guest today is Kim Petrin, Deputy City Manager, Urban Planning and Economy from the City of Edmonton, the Deputy City Manager. Kim, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
This is great. So we're going to go through just some different conversations about your role and what you're doing and some of the things that the City of Edmonton is doing to make itself more attractive to development. But first and foremost, let me just go back. How did you get into real estate? How did you end up working for the city?
Started a few moons ago. I started my career at the City of Edmonton and doing planning technician work and making maps and doing addresses and creating community engagement events, and evolved my role through different planning functions and worked around like land development and doing rezoning applications and subdivision applications and helping to facilitate development and investment in our city. And after I did that about 15 years, I had an early mentor said to me, you should always have private and public sector experience to kind of get that well-rounded understanding of what's happening for city building. So I left the City of Edmonton and moved to Stantec and worked in private consulting for 4 years, which was really an excellent opportunity to kind of learn and understand more from the development community, understand their drivers, and also be able to influence projects at an earlier stage of development. And then about 4 years ago, I moved into my role, branch manager of development services, a previous role to what I'm in now. And that was the role where I got to oversee everything to do with private sector investment on land. So neighborhood planning, rezoning, subdivision, servicing agreements, development and building permits, and all the in-betweens with all of that work. So that was really, really fun.
So when you say oversee, just so that I understand, you're not approving everything. What are your influences? What kind of things are you doing to help improve the quality of the development?
So I oversee a team of about 400 individuals, really passionate city builders within the City of Edmonton. So setting out that strategic direction and how we translate council's vision from our municipal development plan into implementation and the regulatory work that we do. So my team focused on all of the regulatory approvals. And so through that, we needed to lead in terms of process improvement and innovation and trying to respond to work with industry at the pace of business.
So meaning turnaround times. Your staff would manage applications for rezoning or someone fixing their shed versus someone developing 400 units? Like, is it everything in between?
It is, yeah. And that's actually a really good point because our customers are everyone in between. The homeowner that wants to build a deck on the weekend to the private sector investor that's looking to develop a community plan or a tower development. And so through conversations with industry particularly and our customers, we know that our people want certainty, predictability, and timeliness in terms of the service that they expect from the City of Edmonton. So really focused on how do we achieve those development outcomes by process improvement work, innovation, technology, policy changes.
Well, Edmonton is one of the few places across Canada where I've heard positive reviews on land entitlement process.
That's saying a lot.
And yeah. Zoning. It's maybe one of the few bright lights in terms of that process. So why do you think that you function well in that aspect of the job, or as a city, not just you, the foreign people that you oversee? Why is it done better in Edmonton?
So I think it starts with leadership and partnership and vision. So we have our city plan, which is our municipal development plan and our transportation master plan that really sets out the vision for the city we want to become. So how are you going to welcome 1 million more people and create a community that's vibrant, urban, prosperous, and climate resilient? And so in order to do that, we have to translate attracting and retaining talent because we know that investment's mobile. So looking at our regulatory approval process and creating certainty, predictability, and timeliness through that, we know that that encourages investment. And so in doing that, we hear a lot about red tape.
Yeah, sure.
Sometimes my job is red tape, or everything we do at the city is red tape. But really, when we talk about red tape, it's looking at rules or processes or procedures that we have that are overly complex and don't really add value to the development outcome or reduce risk or safety. And so we tried to peel back those layers of the onion, so to speak, in terms of how do we simplify the process and make it easy to do business with us. And so, you know, over a number of years in terms of working with our council and our executive leadership, we've really created a culture of partnership. So it's a shared success in city building that we are a partner with our city builders. We can't do it alone. We can't build our city alone. An investor or a developer needs us to do their work. And so there is a mindset of how can we work together because we'll create a successful city if we do work better
together. Can you give an example of just a specific, maybe not specific, but just general example? I mean, my mind goes to a development that's adjacent to a stream. And then all of a sudden, because of the potential impact of the construction next to the stream, it's an extra year and layers of paperwork. And the developer saying, no, I'm going to be careful. I'll make sure I protect the stream. And yet now it's adding exorbitant amount of costs. And as a result of the city just wanted to be extremely careful not to impact the stream. Maybe that's a bad example because I know environment has to be very, very, has to be protected. And I support that. But maybe you got a better example. But you know what I'm trying to get at, right?
Yeah. So we work really closely with our industry to understand where those pain points are. And it can range because our customers are different, whether it's the small business or the large industrial investor.
Customers being the developers.
The developers. Okay. And developers can be commercial, residential, industrial, and they all have different needs. And they have different drivers or timelines associated with their work. So we try to be really super clear on what we need to make decisions. We established a client liaison unit about 4 years ago to really be that single point of contact for an investor shovel-ready project to be able to show up, talk to one person in the municipality. We figure out all the things within the city in terms of the approvals and the requirements. And then we create a project management approach to the work. So we work in lockstep with our development partner in being able to deliver on the approvals within the timelines that they need to get in the ground.
So there are no surprises?
No surprises.
No somebody coming in at the last minute going, oh, wait a minute, we should get this instead, or this appraisal is 8 months old and it only needs to be 6 months old, or that kind of thing.
We try to be super clear upfront. We do have, you know, different opportunities to meet with city staff to establish what those requirements might be, to lay things out so that when you show up, you know exactly what you need to get your decision. We have a really transformational project that we're working on right now in terms of trying to translate our policy work into the regulatory environment, which is our land use bylaw. So think of the land use bylaw. It's kind of like an old car. We've done a tune-up. We've changed the wheels. We've got new wipers over the years. We've done little things that have made it better. So for example, open option parking, which is getting rid of the parking minimums. Edmonton was the first major municipality in Canada to do that in 2020. And that really helps industry in terms of getting their permit approvals because we're not focused on regulating the things that you know better. You as a business owner know better than we do in terms of what your customers need. We've done some changes to allow more flexibility in our residential zones to create more innovation and allow for different building types. But we now are looking at throwing the old bylaw out, deleting it, and replacing it with a brand new one. So really excited about this piece of work this year. It's going to streamline regulations. It's going to make it simple, clear, and accessible. So it's easy in terms of implementation from a timelines perspective. So it'll be easier to get a permit. And one of the things that we're doing out of that work is looking at automation. And so going back to your comment about, like, how do we listen to customers? Well, when you're going to build a garage, you want to grab a friend, get some pizza, and build your garage on the weekend. You don't want to wait a month for a permit. So we looked at our deck and garage permits. They're low-risk, high-volume application types, and we automated them. So you can apply for a development permit, a building permit, and you get that application approved that day.
Using AI, or is this a predetermined format?
It's a predetermined format, but similar, starting to evolve on AI models. And I can certainly talk about some of the work that we've done in that space using AI to help with our decision making. But, you know, it takes staff time off of those sort of higher volume, lower risk applications and allow them to focus on applications that might be more complex in nature or require a bit more coordination across the corporation to be able to give the approvals.
What's your measurement of success? Like, what KPIs do you pay attention to when looking at the outcomes you're trying to achieve?
there's big picture and little picture, of course, in terms of how we're achieving our city plan and the goals that we've set out for ourselves in city plan, which are things ranging from, you know, the amount of infill that we're seeing within our community, the number of trees that we plant. But when it comes to delivering service, we've established service levels. So I often heard, you're too slow. I can't get a development permit. It's taking too long. Longer than what? There was no number that anybody knew that said, like, well, you're slower than the service level you've said you've established. So we establish service levels, so it creates a lot more clarity on what to expect in terms of timelines. So if the timeline's 10 days, call me at 11 days, because then maybe there's something to look into. So that's really helped to provide a benchmark of what to expect when you come in for a different application. So through that, that's part of our benchmark. We are doing customer satisfaction surveys. And so that's the opportunity to connect back with customers after you've done your application and say, hey, how did we do? How was your experience? How could we do better? And really proud to say that 88% of our customers are really happy. There's always feedback on ways we can improve or do things differently or a little bit better. But I think that's a really excellent key indicator on how our customers are feeling about the service that we deliver.
And a great result too.
It is, yeah. And certainly happy to talk about the great things that we're doing. Last year in 2022, the Canadian Home Builder Association did a benchmarking study looking at development approvals, timelines, and development charges across major municipalities in Canada. Those types of things affect affordability. And really proud that Edmonton is number one on that list.
Yeah, well, and that's a great point. That's where my mind was going next. Like average timeframes. I don't even know what they are. And we're sitting in Toronto right now recording this. I don't even know what they are here, but it's a couple of years, right?
Well, as I said, worst in North America.
Yeah. What is your benchmark from Edmonton? Let's say I'm a developer. I'm coming in to build something, a 100-story apartment building in downtown Toronto. What is this supposed to be? What's the time frame that you would expect to be reasonable?
So a rezoning application, a land development, land use change application, you know, a tower fairly complex like that would probably be within that 160-day mark to a year. So we do the rezoning within that time and we can look at doing concurrent approvals through development permits and then more complexity when it comes to building permit. But we look at how we can work with our customers to get in the ground the time that they need and we try to back manage.
Your permit approvals. Yeah. How involved do you get in some of those more complex applications?
When it comes to any application that requires council approval, I'm one to sort of represent administration in those conversations. We have an excellent team that provides, you know, administration's recommendation in terms of the technical analysis and the servicing and the transportation and the land use analysis, as well as the community perspective. We do a lot of community engagement, which is a really important part of sharing what Edmontonians think about land use changes to council. So I am involved in that, those type of conversations. When it comes to risk and different levels of risk, sometimes applications do elevate to me to provide some direction and clarity in terms of how issues might be resolved.
The community involvement, an interesting topic, you know, in both Vancouver and Toronto, that's two of the other sort of major urban centers, the NIMBYism and just the resistance to development in certain communities is a big deterrent for a lot of the development, right? The councillors, of course, are listening to their ratepayers who are loudly saying, I don't want this here in my backyard. And so, of course, then it becomes a much more challenging endeavor. And that just delays that process, as we're talking about. What's the marketing like in Edmonton to get your communities on board with some of the development?
Well, again, I think it starts leadership and vision. So our city plan, which really articulates how and where we want to grow. So looking at that change around, you know, major nodes and corridors, the expectations around.
Is that written right into the code?
It's written into our policy, just being translated into our code right now. So our zoning bylaw project is renewing our entire land use regulations in terms of how that will be implemented. So, for example, there's 15 different residential zones, I think. I may have that number slightly wrong, but we're collapsing a lot of those zones to create one residential zone that allows for development of everything from single detached row housing, you know, three-story apartment to unit housing, backyard housing, and suites, all within one zone. So that clarity, I think, is helpful for our communities to understand what to expect. There is a level of change, and I think it's on all of us from a city builders to communicate and talk about our vision and that story of change, because a lot of times communities just want to know what's happening in their area, not necessarily that they're opposed, but change is hard.
Don't really be surprised.
Yeah, I was kind of annoyed when my neighbor did their landscaping, right? It's dusty, it's noisy, started doing digging at like 7:30 in the morning. So it's really important for our city builders to build relationships with the community that they're working in. It builds trust. They know who to call if they have questions or want to know what's going on. I think, you know, we learn a lot from our communities as well. Many people have lived in their areas for a number of years and have really good insight and intel of like, well, you know, that path is where the kids take a shortcut to go to school. Oh, well, how can we incorporate that?
Build a sidewalk.
Yeah, so there's really important community comments that come through the engagement process. I do recognize, you know, change is hard and it's incremental and over time, but really important for us to include our community partners when we are doing development. Even though, you know, there's important to recognize who makes the decision, whether it's a council decision or a development officer decision. But I do think it's a really important part of how we build our city together.
How long have you lived in Edmonton for?
40 years, probably. Yeah, I was born in Ontario, actually. But we moved. Alberta's calling. I don't know if you've heard that yet.
At great expense to Alberta, we have received that message, yes.
Well, and we're migrating accordingly.
We are.
As long as you don't call it Ontarible when you're out in Alberta, because I hear that a lot when I travel around BC and Alberta, always a funny one.
Got really strong affordability, right? Where the average home price in Edmonton, I think in the first quarter of this year was $480,000 or just under $500,000.
So it's over really, a million here. So it's half the price.
Really quite affordable.
Well, shorter timelines on development can be a contributing factor to that. I mean, one of the most expensive periods of a development, of course, is that hold. We have no income on the property. And that contributes to Toronto's major issues with affordability. Your short timelines would have the opposite effect. I've always thought that's an easier gift to give developers than cutting development charges or density bonuses or anything else that matter to developers. You just cut the timelines. And it's the least of a give from the municipality. And cutting development charges, I mean, you're leaving holes in budgets now. It's just stunning that it's not more widely adopted, that should be a major goal. Not to change a conversation about Edmonton into Toronto, but recently here, as of right, all single family homes now have the ability to go to 4 units. It was a bit of a contentious decision with people strongly for and strongly against it. What would be your opinion on something like that in Edmonton?
We're going through the exact same conversation right now through our zoning bylaw work.
Is that the collapse you're talking about?
It is.
Yeah. Okay, that's why my mind went there.
It's a very live conversation right now. We're anticipating to bring our bylaw in its entirety to council in October of this year. So yeah, it is causing quite the conversation, robust conversation amongst communities. There's tension with redevelopment and trees that are on the property because, you know, our mature trees are beautiful, but balancing that with density and affordability and the need and the demand for housing and adding supply, cost of infrastructure, who pays for the pipes, the fire hydrants and the schools and the amenity centers and community spaces. But, you know, I sort of think that open for business approach, and there's so much from an investor's perspective of those different types of risk as they move from the go, no go decision to now we're into approvals and then we're into construction. If we can provide certainty and clarity through the development approval, we've done our bit. So we're really focused on that, looking at how we use technology to help support that work, because there's a human aspect to the work. So I think we're all kind of fighting for labor in some ways, whether it's talent to do the work or work in industry or even labor is becoming a bit of a challenge within our industry.
You mentioned vision off the top as one of the main sort of drivers in your efforts to make Edmonton as attractive to business and investment. What's the ultimate vision? What's 2027 look like? If you were here today saying, okay, in 2027, a developer or a client or customer would have this experience, what does that look like?
Well, you can come now and you're already going to have a different experience. I'll say that because we care. Like I said, I feel we see the role of the municipality and the role of industry to really create a partnership to deliver on city building. So we create that vibrancy and that concentration of uses by working together. And so, you know, 5 years from now, we'll have continued to turn the dial on whether it's regulation or process improvement work or technology. We're doing machine learning modeling right now using AI.
RPA, robotic process automation.
Okay.
I thought you were going to say that. Okay, never mind.
No, but
same thing.
Applicants apply for an application. We often struggle with, you gave me 5 of the 7 things I need to do my job. So, you know, it's an incomplete application or the quality of the application. So we're now working to create a model that can look at the application before it's accepted by a human to do the work. And so things like that can save a lot of time because it's immediate. You get that feedback right away as an applicant to know, oh, I forgot Schedule B and page 5 doesn't have a signature or a stamp, those types of things. So all those little days and weeks matter. And I've got some stats actually on the time. There's often like, how do you measure red tape reduction? Because, you know, you might experience it as a homeowner because you got your deck permit really quickly. But you as a business owner may not have realized that because, you know, that's not the application type that you did. So we've started to measure all of our days and money saved by our applicants through all the different work that we've done. And I think the statistic is 261,000 days and $4.6 million a year that we're saving. Oh, wow. due to the process improvement and the changes that we've made over time. So I think that's really impactful. And, you know, 7 years from now, I think we'll start to keep moving on that journey of change. We are always thinking about how we can deliver our service, how we can work with our industry.
Yeah.
For example, through the pandemic, Service Alberta, so where you get your land title registration, was months and months delayed. So that's really impactful when you're trying to do a land deal and you can't get it titled. And then
we're well aware we have to often get gap insurance because you can't get the registration done in time when you're closing the mortgage. So we're fully aware.
And I won't give you a permit.
Yeah.
You don't have a title. And so we created a process to be able to bridge that so that we can give you a permit and you can get in the ground up until a point, and then you'll have your, then the registration is required, and then we move along the process. But, you know, it's those type of really fast response tactics that we need to do to work with industry to keep things moving along.
I can say it, you can't, but I'm envisioning same day approvals on that 100 unit apartment building. Just submit everything in, you got machine learning, and out pops the permits the same day. That's where you're going, right?
Well, actually, both related to that, then. Currently, not Aaron's vision for the near term. What would be the most complex applications that would see a majority automation in terms of the process? Like, how far up the food chain has it got?
So we started with the decks and garages, low risk, high volume. We're turning the dial on that early in 2024 to look at single semi-detached residential in our developing communities. So again, lower risk, higher volume type of applications.
More standardized application process or requirements.
That's right. Yeah. So we're starting there. And I think we've got to continually reflect and see what's working, what's not working.
Because at a certain level, you need somebody to read it that has some level of expertise. You can't rely on just, yeah, they've provided every document, right?
Right. And I think when we get into redevelopment and in communities where there are already homes and people living there, the context of the situation is really important to consider, feedback and perspectives to share. So infill or redeveloping type applications might just have a little bit more complexity to them. So how far we can automate in that space, we'll have to explore. But I think it's really exciting in terms of being able to leverage our technology and our process improvement work to help deliver the service. And we even have created these different models where you can click in and say, I want to build this and I'm building it in this location and this is the address. And then it pops out. Here's what you need to do. These are different files. And so it just clarity in terms of what to expect when you come into the city to make an application.
And previously, would an applicant be, you know, calling somebody at the city trying to get those kinds of answers?
Yeah, or you'd try to figure it out online.
Get lost in a website somewhere.
Lost in the internet.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is for sure solving the kind of task that nobody wants to do currently. Has there been any misfires in rolling out the increased automation?
Nothing that was brought to my attention. I think there were some little tweaks and things that we had to clean up when we first rolled it out. But otherwise, I think it's been working really well. It's been working well with our industry in terms of feedback. We have a number of advocacy groups, whether it be the Canadian Home Builder Association or our business owner group or our commercial real estate group or our Urban Development Institute group, where we meet with them quite regularly to understand what's emerging in terms of issues that they're dealing with or what's problematic in terms of the processes or what's not clear. So we continue to, you know, listen and learn to lead through what changes we need to make and what might be a priority. We can't do all the things. So we try to be super clear on, like, we're doing these 5 things now and we'll reassess when those things are done and look at what we need to focus our attention on next. But we've done a lot of work in the home building space, you know, looking to support small businesses and industrial type of developments next, because attracting and retaining that kind of investment in our city starts to balance the tax base and creates jobs, which, you know, then you have your
self-fulfilling.
Which of the asset classes needs the most work to get them where you want it to be?
Well, I think we're always looking to attract industrial and logistics type of applications or investment in our city. There's complexities, whether it's land acquisition or servicing challenges. So we've created different programs to try to respond to that type of issue. So we have a policy that allows you to be able to finance the infrastructure costs or any over expenditures that you would have using tax uplift to help offset those costs till other developers in the basin might be investing. So that's been really helpful to help de-risk the project for industrial land base. We're also competing with our region, but we work together really well as a region in terms of attracting investment into the city of Edmonton. And we've got Global Edmonton that, you know, is out attracting investment in our city. And just as an example, we had Air Products, $1.3 billion hydrogen investment in our city. And really excited to share the CEO was that the UN Climate Change Conference in Egypt earlier this year and said Edmonton was the best place to do business in. So that's really exciting that we, you know, sort of look at those different opportunities, those really important investment projects and say, we want you. We want you to invest in our city. We're here to help. We care. We see the benefits of this being in our city and let's figure out how we make this happen fast. And so what were some of the timelines on that one? I think we did the rezoning on that application in 78 days and the development permit within their phase one within 46 days. So really impressive timelines.
It's very impressive.
It's not marginally better. That's eons better than I think the average there out there. Unfortunately, it's almost disappointing that we have to celebrate how incredible that is, but it really does
because
deserve.
Because it's also problem is unique, right?
That's it deserves celebration.
Sorry to interrupt, but it does come with a partnership, right? There's a shared responsibility and accountability that, you know, our applicants show up and we show up and we work together. So
it goes both ways. That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's complexities when it comes to building codes, meeting all the codes. I'm not a safety codes officer, but I do know that we can struggle with those types of things because we don't always get the information that we need, or you don't address all of the codes that need to be addressed, and it creates some iterations in the application process. So having
the better the quality of application, the easier it is to do your job. And that makes perfect sense.
Are you going to have more or less cranes up in Edmonton in the next 3 or 4 years?
Well, in 2021, we did, through the pandemic, we were looking at how do we incentivize development because there was some uncertainty with investment in our city. So we created a construction grant program that was about just under $23 million to offset some of the tax increases that you would experience over 5 years and give you some time to build the building and lease it up. So we had 10 projects leverage that grant program, so 10 cranes, and, you know, it created, I think, just over 2,000 units and 4,000 jobs. So looking to kind of continue that momentum, our council has been looking at what are the other opportunities to do that again, and particularly that investment in our downtown. I did hear that Toronto has the most cranes going in Canada, and having walked around yesterday, it was really impressive.
We just had Sheila Botting on earlier before you sat down, and she gave us the number 256 cranes in Toronto, which is more than the rest of North America combined. Second is Seattle with 50-something.
It's amazing.
And yet we're still 100,000 residential units a year short to support the demand.
That is, not to get back on the topic of Toronto, but that is the cognitive dissonance in that very tough to do development here, economically thin, so many cranes in the sky.
Yeah, it's backwards. Anyway.
We'll save that for another topic.
We're talking about how great Edmonton is here.
We are out of time. It's been very interesting for us because, you know, not to besmirch any other guests, but we do have a lot of people in similar type roles come on. And so it's interesting to talk to somebody on the government planning side of it and also from a municipality experiencing a lot of success in that department as well. So thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today. I want to thank, of course, First National for powering the podcast. And I want to thank, of course, the Real Estate Forums for hosting us here at the Edmonton Real Estate Forum. But most importantly to our guest, Kim, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Kim.
Call me if you're coming to invest in Edmonton.
We will.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the CRE podcast. The information from this broadcast is not to be relied upon as financial, investing, professional accounting, or legal advice. First National Financial LP holds Financial Services Commission of Ontario license number 10514 and 11252.